when you do a jam, you get to, it's like you put on armor that just kind of keeps those things from hitting you for a while.
Yeah.
Just, well, in reality, it's just, called just piling up
the
outside.
Armor of neglect.
Yeah.
Scotch.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 214 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm living in a web nightmare.
Sam, and I'm the artist, and I'm tired.
This is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is July 14th, 2019, smack in the middle of the Butterscotch Shenana Jam. Also, before we get started, we have a warning. There's going to be profanity, probably.
Almost definitely.
We can't really make any promises there. We'll definitely try to.
Not. I was going to say Nightmare Hellscape, but I thought I would hold off on that one until the profanity.
Nightmare
warning.
Dangscape.
Nightmare Dangscape.
Okay, so we are what are we, like 50-something hours into the jam? Yep. There's 14 hours left before submissions are due.
So is that right? Is it 14 hours until 8 a.m.?
Yeah.
We have to sleep during that time.
We got to go to sleep, and then it's right back to work making games. So there's just no rest.
I had to take a break from my job of making games. Yeah.
All right. So during this first part of the episode – oh, yeah. So we're doing this live. We actually have looks like 39,000 people in the Discord listening to this episode live. And so we're going to be taking some questions from people a little bit later in the episode. And we're also going to be sending some questions out into the audience. And so in the meantime, while you guys are thinking of questions you might want to ask or things you want us to talk about, we're just going to talk about what we've been doing. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about our experience so far. What has happened?
Oh, my gosh. Well, so, you know, our whole goal was we've been doing this for 7 years. We've been jamming for basically all that time. And so the question was, can we just make an MMO? Is that a thing we could just do?
Well, okay. Anytime we do a jam, we always try to find something that's just going to really hurt.
Well, you always got to pick something to push on, right? And I think we have plenty of people in the Discord who are talking about, you know, the jam kicking their ass, so to speak, but that it somehow feels good.
Yeah.
It's a very good feeling to sort of stretch yourself. And so, yeah, we always pick some dimension. Everybody
it's
has
like
to
brain
pick
yoga.
It really is. Yeah. And so, yeah, we just said, you know what? It's time. Let's do
it. We've never made a multiplayer game.
We've done nothing with real-time networking ever.
Yeah. So why don't we just try to do it in the most constrained way possible in the largest possible implementation? Yep.
Although part of the kind of the joke of all of this is that an MMO is actually easier to make than a networked multiplayer game where there's matchmaking involved.
Yeah. Because you just put people in there and
so really, everybody just goes route. In the same place. Yeah. I think it's actually way easier to make an MMO than it is to make some sort of, you know, four-player dungeon crawler.
Well, it sounds like we have our
thing.
Next jam
yeah.
problem to solve. But how did it go? Where are we at? Where's the game?
We are at 2 hours ago. We were missing some functionality that was required, but everything that was in there was working great.
Yeah, super slick.
Now we are at...
So we're like, well, just real quick, just add this one last...
So now,
one last little piece.
Uh-huh. So now we have all of the required components, but some of them are real, really broken.
Yeah.
Right, 3 minutes before we walked in here, we fixed one of them, which was that if you were walking around like little trees and trees are spawning and stuff, and you'd be standing there next to a tree that you knew spawned. You asked the server for it. The server knew it was there. You're just standing there next to it. And they hang out for, say, like 30 seconds or something. And you turn around and you try to bite it because that's how you interact with things in this game.
You bite it.
So you turn around and you try to bite it, and then it's not there. I mean, you can see it, but
it's not there.
But the server's like, I don't know what tree, man.
Yeah,
what
are you talking about? This is. And so because there's no – the server's not sending a response. It just doesn't do anything because we didn't set that up. And so your character just sits there with its mouth open.
Just waiting. Like,
just waiting for the server
for the
to come
server
back.
To say, yeah, you can chomp that tree.
And it never does.
My favorite part, though, was that Adam kind of got up in a bit of a huff and walked over to the – to get a Diet Coke. It was just sort of like cracking. And then I was like, do you need a rubber duck? And he's like, yeah, sure. So I go stand over there. And then like a couple minutes in, as he's explaining, he goes, it needs to be a fucking and.
Yeah.
Because he missed an and or.
I had an or where I needed an and.
Oh, that's the worst.
It happens all the time. Yeah. So normally in our jams, Adam is our web developer. So normally he's kind of like on the periphery.
Well, we almost never incorporate web design, or in the past for our jam games, we've not incorporated web tech into the design at all.
Yeah.
It was always a thing we just kind of would like, let's tack this on in the last, you know, 12 hours.
But no, you basically made half the game.
Yeah.
The half that lives on the server. So you're doing like legit game programming plus web code all at once.
Yep.
Let's talk about what the game is and like how we kind of scoped it and then where it landed.
Sure. So Goop, so basically what it's called is Fields of Goop. And it is a MMORPG slash battle royale of sorts.
Mostly because we didn't have time to make enemies. So we're like, I guess other players are the enemies.
Yeah. Because we actually had this discussion last night. We were like, okay, well, we got players and their players are moving around. The server didn't have any trouble knowing where players are and having players know where each other are. And then we had items in the world. So you could like interact with static items. But then we were like, for enemies, we're going to need AI.
That means the AI is going to be on the server.
AI is going to be on the server. We have to recode up the thing logic. Because I just call them things that are in the world. So recode the thing logic to now have moving things.
Oh, God.
And then we were like, what if we just let you fight each other? Because
I'm curious about this because we always during jams we have – basically when your skills are running up against the very real constraints at the time.
Yeah.
I think there's always some interesting – compromises have to be made, and oftentimes they're totally fine, and they may end up even making the game a better game. So I'm curious just to field some responses from the audience. If anybody can speak to any experience they had that was similar to that, where you're running into basically something you need to do or you feel like you need to do, and you realize that there's this sort of easy way out that can make use of what you've already made and some twist. So basically what we ended up doing is making it that players can actually bite each other. And kill each other as well as heal each other, which is just how it is.
Because I had enough generic logic that all I had to do was just apply the same function just to a player object instead of a thing object. And then it would just, it would just work, you know?
And then the conversation we had last night was also, okay, how do we just kind of up the interactivity level a little bit? Because we don't know how much game will actually come out of this.
Yeah.
And our goal right now is just to finish getting it working. And so it's not going to be well balanced by any stretch.
No.
But so basically what that means is that we said, okay, is there anything we can do, any little thing we can do to make it so people will just hang out in here? And so we said, okay, we need some emotes. So we went back and added a plop animation to the character and a jump animation. So just like in most modern MMOs, people just jump all the time.
Yeah, because it accomplishes nothing.
It accomplishes nothing, but it's fun. It's just a little way for you to interact. And then we have this plop where the character just sits down. And so – I got to experience this because sure did not know that those were in. And so we were walking around and then I just plopped down next to him. And he's like, oh, how did you do that? And then we just sat down and then we sort of had this little mini game where we tried to line up our little square bodies to make a little wall of eyeballs. And then we were staring at him while he was fixing netcode.
Yep.
It was just dumb and fun. So we're trying to get the game to actually work. But yeah, that's kind of where we're at. And
right now it does. So we were debating deploying it right before we got on the cast. Because you can get out there and you can be in the world and you can do stuff. It's just that when you're trying to put things, it's right now a loot problem, right?
Yeah.
Currently, which is when you're trying to put loot in your inventory, sometimes it goes in there. Sometimes it disappears. Sometimes the numbers on that loot get real wacky. Yep.
I got that one though.
Is that one fixed?
That one's good. That one's good now.
So that one's fixed. But now,
one down.
Yeah. But it's just so frustrating because I know I intentionally coded up logic to do things like make sure that if you throw loot on the ground, it can't land on top of another piece of loot on the ground.
That was exactly what happened.
And then we got out there testing it, and it's just landing right on top of itself.
It's probably one of those ores.
It's always a missed exclamation mark, which is the not.
Mm-hmm.
Or you just forgot when you're. It's almost always Boolean logic.
It is
fucking always Boolean logic that screws.
You got a parenthesis in the wrong place, so you grouped something together with the wrong thing.
So I think we're about three bugs away from actually being able to deploy.
Yeah. The question is, how many hours will it take to find those definitely stupid tiny bugs that are causing all of our headaches?
Yeah. So it's been good.
Oh yeah, it has been a blast. It's just the last couple hours have been a little aggravating.
Yeah, so we'll talk a little bit more about that as we kind of get more into the questions where we talk about everybody else's experiences as well. Let's talk about the event as a whole. What happened? We got 400 people, more than 400. Mm-hmm. I think we're losing a few at the tail end there.
Yeah, you always lose a few.
Yeah. People who just decided, you know what, I'm not going to subject people to this thing that I made.
Yeah, we're hoping we can stay at the 400 mark because we've been just under it for the past 2 years. We got just over it this time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So if you're thinking about quitting, don't you quit.
Don't ruin that 400.
You build that game and you submit it because we need to be over 400 people. And I think already we've had 19 or 20 games submitted. Mm-hmm. So things really like in the last 15 minutes really kind of ramp up. It's usually like the last 80 games will come in that last little chunk of time.
But I would definitely recommend, since we're recording this at 6 p.m. on Sunday.
Yes.
So those of you listening to us live who are jamming, consider, if you're in the same time zone, not staying up all night until 8 a.m. tomorrow.
Yes, definitely.
Because that's just not good for your human body.
You can't get that healthy living achievement.
No,
it's true.
I think there's a good chance that everybody's already kind of flopped on that one. I know I have.
Mm-hmm. I flopped right out of the gate. Yeah.
Yep.
As soon as we're like, okay, it's time to get started. And then I'm like, boom, chocolate bar. Shit, I'm out. I can't do it.
Well, so what have we seen this year? What's sort of the lay of the land?
All right. So we are, just to recap, our themes were DNA Chaos, Wrenches 101, and Christmas Eve. So first of all, hilariously, at least two people, used the wren part of wrenches to make a game about a bird, a wren, throwing or using wrenches at or on opponents of some kind. Would not have thought of that, but apparently
it's in the air.
At least two people did.
So I always love seeing when like a theme sparks like the exact same weird thing. We had a lot of people building loot box games because we had the achievement, the achievement of totally ethical surprise mechanics, I think it was. So we had a lot of people doing that. I saw a great pun. We have a Santa themed game called Doom Slayer, but spelled like slay.
Yep.
Like S-L-E-A.
Like to murder.
S-L-E-A-I.
To fly.
Yeah. The thing that Santa, you know, Doom Slayer.
Hilarious.
Game where you're a submarine. And you ping your sonar by yelling ping at your computer.
Yeah, I'm real excited to take that one.
That was for the SEAL approved achievement where you control the game with sound. And then we also had Cammy Moop, who is one of the high end level builders from Levelhead, made a game where you are cursed by a cursor. Before going dungeon diving.
A cursor, like a mouse cursor?
Yeah. It flies by and gives a curse.
It's a cursor.
That's what it does.
Makes sense. This is all the kind of puns that I want.
So I'm enjoying the fact that so many people really capitalized on puns for all of these things.
It's very much in the spirit of the jam, I think.
I feel like if you're one of those people who gets really upset about puns, then you probably aren't super pumped about pretty much any of the things that we make at all. So, and then we also... had a lot of people doing the healthy living achievement, it seemed like.
It was a big hit,
yeah.
Which is funny because it's like sort of give everybody an excuse to go, you know, be good at doing the correct things in life. And everyone's like, yes, for 48 hours, I can hold out. I can eat apples. I can sleep.
You say like for 48 hours, I'm going to just like really focus. I'm going to be fully motivated the whole time. I'm going to build something amazing. I'm going to take care of my body, take care of my mind. And then when it's over – I don't know. Just go back to
back to how it was.
Yeah, Netflix and binging chocolate.
I want to bring some audience stuff in here, some audience feedback. So after mentioning, you know, using something in your game for a different purpose, sort of halfway through a jam as you're trying to solve some problems, that Rumpus said basically everything in my game this year was me underestimating how difficult something would be and coming up with some really good, really rough, good enough situations. And Astrobeef said, I was making code for equipment and realized I could use the exact same code to make a tree drop apples.
Yeah.
Yeah, which, buddy.
No idea how that works, but I'm glad it did.
I can imagine a few scenarios.
Yeah, I had a similar deal. I had my code set up so that I could have when things out in the world were murdered, that they could throw loot on the ground.
Mm.
And I was like, I can just use this for players too because I just like pretend the player was a thing.
Yep. Well, we actually had a scenario where when we were applying stats to the equipment, so the items that you get out in the world, they have like a rarity. So they might be like epic or common or whatever. And they've got all these different stats on them. And then at some point we're like, well, we need to put stats on the player, but we don't want to change the format of those stats. So we'll just send all those stats to the player too. So the player also has a rarity attached to
them. Your rarity is just zero.
The rarity, they're just a common
– You're a peasant.
A common plebe.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of our biggest problems was data serialization, which is just sucky. So it's basically converting, you know, binary crap into useful data because it's just so easy. Just, you know, you're just off by one thing. You're like, Seth uses a signed and I use an unsigned, or one of us uses 16 bits instead of 8 or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like one little thing you can do and then the whole thing is just
And now every number wrong. You see is negative 2 billion.
Yep. And so, to try to like solve that, we just said, okay, even when we don't, we're going to minimize the number of different ways we have to process the data. So if that means sending a whole bunch of data we don't need or that is just a bunch of zeros, just so that the format is like the sequence is the same, then that is what we're
doing that. We're doing that.
Fill it up.
Yep.
Yes. Also, Coffee Chemist is asking how many items we have in the game.
Infinite.
We only have, yeah, it's an open world, so it's just they yep. keep respawning. You could play it for the rest of your life if you want.
That's true.
Yeah, so we actually built a loot system that was, so the game is inspired by Goop Legacy from before, which is all about mutating your goop. So we use the DNA chaos theme. And so the only item you get is mutagens. And so the game is basically about like going out there trying to find the mutagens that are just right for you, you know, to make your character run super fast or be really tanky or be like a dodging maniac or be a healer because you can also heal each other because, you know, it's an MMO. Know
what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So we only have one item that you pick up, but we have infinite variability within that item.
Or infinite enough variability.
Bam wants to know what achievements we got. I was actually just about to cover that. So achievements we got, we're gonna claim the innovation achievement, which is that your game is a battle royale because the only thing you can do in the game is kill people and you can have 100. So
yeah,
so one of those close enough.
And we do have an arena right in the middle of the map.
It's true.
And we have three teams and the teams start on three sides of the arena.
Yeah.
So it's 100% by design.
But you can't eat people on your same team. So
there is that.
Yeah. Well, we were going to – we're still working out the details. Like maybe you can only eat goops that are of the opposing colors, but I don't know.
We'll find out.
All right. So we also naturally got the Buttersmooth Tools achievement because we get that one by default. It's just one of the perks of being the organizers. Let's see. We got Persistent Universe. So
the server is alive and just lives there and you touch it.
Yeah. There's just that something about the game is just there forever. And when you leave and come back, game doesn't care. Mm-hmm. It's still just doing its thing.
Oh, that's not currently exactly true.
Right. On account of all those bugs.
So we got to fix this. We get that achievement.
Yeah, we're getting there.
The server is persistent until it dies. We got the franchise achievement, which is it's like a shared universe or sequel game. So we made
– This is actually the fourth.
This is the fourth Goop game that we've made.
Yeah.
Okay. So
let's cover the saga so far.
First game, Goopademic, was a stealth game where you're a person who was in their apartment building and you got goop on your head.
Yep. You got infected, basically.
You got infected by goop, and now there's all kinds of mercenaries, government or whatever, who are in there on a cleanup crew trying to get you out of there because you got the goop on you. So that was like a really weird 8-hour jam stealth game we made. Then we made Do You Even Lift, where a bunch of scientists were doing some experiments. I guess you got
caught.
Maybe
they caught that guy.
They caught that guy.
Yeah, okay? They sort of synthesized whatever was on his head.
Yeah,
the goop.
So the scientists, they're like, this goop is weird. Like, we're going to do some experiments on
it. It's a Stranger Things situation, right?
Yeah. But turns out, the goop got loose. And now, mercenaries are helicoptering in.
They're hogger riding.
They're riding a space pig, and they're coming down through the ceiling, and they're riding the elevators to try to defeat the goops and rescue the scientists. Right. So in that game, you play as the elevator. You play as the elevator.
We didn't have time to make the elevator operator, which was eventually going to be a person.
So now the goops are out. Okay. They got out. The mercs were they were able to save the scientists, but they were not able to contain the goop.
Could not.
Okay. So
continues to spread.
Now the goops are out in the wild. This is when Goop Legacy happens. The goops
last year
starting to reproduce.
The goops are out in the wild and they're reproducing, but
they're mixing genes. They're working their way up the evolutionary ladder.
They're getting very strong, but they only live for a minute. So that's kind of the hard part.
Actually, it's not true though, because the shorter your lifespan, the faster your evolutionary trajectory is.
Oh,
yeah. Ooh, right. That's true.
Because
the more rapidly you can.
So we should say they're evolving really quickly because they only live for a minute.
There you go.
So I believe so Musha is saying that he doesn't believe we can play Goop Legacy anymore. I think you can play it, but you can't log into the Rumpus site.
Or at least on that latter part.
Yeah, you can't mix your parts.
Yeah, you can't mix your goop. Yeah, we did have a DNA mixing thing in that game where like you could mix your goop with another player's goop and your goop had dominant and recessive genes. Mm-hmm. And that was just part of who your goop was. So you could like give somebody else your HP and get their –
Yeah.
And this was the first game that had Rumpus in it.
Yeah. So that was Goop Legacy. And now we're on the fourth of the legendary Goop franchise that we only make during jams.
Apparently.
And this one's now a full-fledged MMO. Also, we have Discord rich presence.
Yeah. My favorite thing was sure just sort of quietly working in the background, getting Discord rich presence work, which we don't have in any of our games, by the way.
Like, yeah.
Another thing we've just never done. And then he just comes over and he's like, hey, it works now. I got a pull request out. And then, it's just so some people saw us playing on Discord, which is hysterical. But it's very cool. And probably the funniest cherry to put on top of this, like, build an MMO achievement is also have rich presence. Well, by the time of the jams.
But now we also know that we can use rich presence in Levelhead,
which we're definitely going to do very cool. soon.
Probably tomorrow.
Yeah.
So we got a question from Omerice, who says, will the Goop franchise get big and turn into films, novels, etc.? So here's the thing about the Goop franchise. This is only going to be made out of products that can be made in a weekend.
Yep.
Okay. So if we can make a Goop film in 48 hours, we'll do that. If we can write a book in 48 hours, that's fine too. Mm-hmm. But any more time than that, it's just frankly, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
So
very much like the, you know, the essence of the Goops, which is, you know, they live fast,
die young. Bad Goops do it pretty good.
Yeah, they do pretty good.
Say.
Also, the Q-Boy Goop, who was sort of the blockier square Goop in the in Goop Legacy, who a lot of people liked, is actually the one I used as kind of the base model for what was supposed to be one of three. There were going to be three characters, but the total volume of animations I did for the character in Fields of Goop was so high that I did not have time to do any more than the one.
Now,
so we just did
the whole reason is they have legs.
Legs and arms.
Legs
and
arms.
And they're doing stuff, which is actually the big difference.
Oh, yeah. That's part
usually,
of it, too.
Usually we're just like, whatever, just bounce it on the ground and we'll
move
on.
And put an explosion there.
Yeah, put an explosion on it. And I'm trying to not do that anymore. So that was a big push on
me. Yeah, we definitely ratcheted the fidelity of our animations in terms of game drafts.
Yeah, definitely.
So by a lot.
Enderstorm wants to know what ideas we have to expand the Goop franchise into the future.
Mm-hmm.
So here's
the next one thing has to be spacefaring Goops. You know?
Well, the Goops are expanding, so maybe –
but they're also gaining sentience.
Well, I think they probably –
There needs to be a city building. Then it's Goop Space Program.
And then it's a 4X game.
Then it's a 4X. Goops are now
– What's beyond 4X?
5X, obviously.
Do we just go into VR at that point and start
I feel like 5X – wait, what's 4X? Explore, expand.
Execute.
Execute.
Exterminate.
Those are the same. And then there's
– well, it depends on whether you're – execute can also mean just to perform
like
a function.
Murder,
you know?
Or just do well.
Yeah.
Mm. So what would the 5th X be?
5X. Exonerate.
There you go. Ooh, you got to have a judicial system in your game as well. You got to develop the laws.
I saw that Astro Beef asked a question. How much did you guys improve from the Shenanigans Jam last year? So I think a really fun part about doing any jam routinely is that you can use it as a benchmarking thing, which is fantastic. So speaking this from myself, in between this jam and last year's jam, I have done just a ton of work on the art side. And I also took my first ever art class, which ended up – two art classes actually, which ended up adding about 230 hours of additional art time at the end of last year to my sort of general pool, which is equivalent to a couple of weeks of work, just pure or just like some number of jams. And so I actually posted earlier in the Shenanigans Jam a image which actually has all of the art from Fields of Goop on it. And I can definitely say that one of the things I realized I really like doing is I just love animating because for some reason like I think I was very scared of it before because what it does is it requires a lot of different drawings.
From different angles.
From different angles even. Uh-huh. So surprise, that wasn't a thing I wanted to do. But as I sort of started cracking into it, it's just so – like it's just where things get interesting and get fun. So that plop animation, for example, literally nothing is happening on the game side. Literally nothing. The character is the same as it was, but we just make it plop on the ground and sit down like a demo. And it is so fun to do. And so it's one of those
probably
things
the most important feature.
Honestly, it probably is. And so it's one of those things where like it just adds so much life. And so that's what I really focus on for this jam. And I think I at least had a lot more confidence to just kind of start swinging for the fences on that stuff, which was a lot of fun. So I'm very happy with my output and also with just the quality of it this time around.
Yeah. I thought it was also really interesting from the programming perspective of we put this MMO together, and when it came to actually like thinking through the game logic of how to talk to the server. It just wasn't that hard this time around.
No.
Like we've kind of dabbled in trying to figure these things out in the past. And it always just seemed like this incoherent ball of nonsense mm-hmm. that we could never quite hit it from any angle. And this time, just kind of went. So
I'd actually say that nothing about it was every single moment was confusing.
Yes.
Because you're juggling so many things.
The funny thing, we had a conversation about it because I think last night we had a pizza arrive and we all just kind of descended on it downstairs. And Adam and Seth were like, you know, if this was actually like full production, we would not be doing it the way we are, which is they're literally just screaming across.
So they're we just have a production server.
Like, I just made a breaking change. Is that cool? Because it's broken.
Good luck. I've documented it though, so we got that going for us.
Yeah, we had Trello, but we were using it very loosely.
And what you would normally do is also, you know, the server wouldn't just be running and Seth wouldn't be using the production server that I would be publishing all my changes to.
We didn't have a dev server.
We didn't have it yet. And the reason that I did it that way is because I was like, well, I just needed to make sure that we know that whatever we actually accomplish works on the server. Because when we go to deploy it, if we deploy it and then it doesn't work, then that's going to suck. So I was like, if we just keep it there the whole time, then Seth isn't worried about setting it up on his machine so we don't waste time there. And I think probably for a weekend that was still a good move.
Yeah.
But even one more day and that would have been the wrong move, mm-hmm. I think.
Yep. So if we had a 53-hour jam, that's the cutoff.
Because now you're going to need that local environment.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're about – because we started around noon on Friday. And then we went to the St. Louis Game Dev Co-op, which, by the way, I think right now they're doing their live demos on a big projector over at Rankin Institute. So you won't be able to catch it currently, but they're over there showing off games and stuff, which is really cool. So we went to the barbecue. So I think we're past 48 hours now. We're at more like 50-something, 53 maybe, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we started at noon on Friday.
We started at noon, but then we did spend a couple hours at that event. So we're in like around the early 50s.
Yeah. Someone was asking in the community forums if they were like, oh, yeah, it's a 72-hour jam. Is it actually 48? Like, I'm confused. And I was like, the spirit of the jam was just to do cool stuff. So if you're just having a good time.
If you need another 30 minutes, I don't care.
Just have fun.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah. We actually had a lot of people early on. Trying to find the contours of the rules of the achievements. Like, does this count as triangles? Or, like, what if I eat – what's healthy enough for food?
Mm-hmm. The thing to remember is this is all for you.
Yeah, this is all – this whole jam is your own thing. So just –
Everything that we provided was to make it so that if you followed them as helpful guidelines, you would have the best experience for yourself possible.
Well, so I'm curious what some people in the audience's take was on the jam. How did you find it? Was it your first time doing it? Like, give us a little bit about how the jam actually, you know, what it did to you. Because we generally find that they tend to put us on this weird sort of creative high for just a couple of days.
Yeah.
And because part of my problem with getting that whole healthy living achievement, I went home and I went to bed in time to get 8 hours of sleep, but I was just awake. Yeah. you know?
I got home about midnight and I was like, perfect. Mm-hmm. Going to be up around 8. That's all good.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm.
And then at 1 a.m., I'm still just like staring at the ceiling.
I had like seven different ideas for Levelhead while I was driving home. And I was like, why?
Yeah.
Why are these
Here's the thing. I had another thing happen where – because like we're here in the office working. And normally if it's a weekend and I'm not working, then I am like chatting with some of our Levelhead players and stuff and like collecting bug reports and whatnot. And I may like dabble in some bug fixes and stuff on like our main game. But here I'm like, I'm so busy trying to get this freaking Goop MMO up and running. And I would like tab over to the Levelhead channel and there's people talking about bugs that they're finding or whatever. And I saw it and I literally just started sweating. Like, like my head just kind of like, it's like a waterfall situation. I was eating my breakfast. And I was like, oh no, because there's stuff wrong in the game and I just can't fix it right now. You know? So that sucked. So I feel like I kind of like went even further than the healthy living where I didn't get enough sleep. I ate pretty bad food.
Cortisol levels through the
and
roof.
And I was just stressed as hell about all these things going on. Like, Levelhead is fine, but still, mm-hmm. you know, it's my baby. I got to take care of it.
Cammy Moop mentioned that he gets less of a creative high in online jams, which I think is 100% always going to be the case. Face-to-face interaction is really good. I was actually chatting with someone about remote work the other day, just kind of shooting the breeze about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where I think it was such a big trend in like the early 2000s when it was mm-hmm. suddenly possible to do and like a legitimate thing to do. But he was like, his partner works in like in another country, and then came over for 6 months to finish one of their games and actually live in the same spot. And he said it was just like so good working together. So yeah, I mean, for the next gen,
we also know the Rack 7 team.
Mm-hmm.
So they made Dark Echoes, and they're making a
Splitter Critters,
and weird Sasquatch game. Like they make weird stuff. They live like 3 blocks from each other, and they work remotely.
They said they see each other every few months or something.
Yeah, and they're like, I just can't be bothered go over there. So it's, I guess it's not for everyone, but yeah.
Yeah, and I see Michael Savage said, who's also the one who made the Ping submarine game, which I'm very excited about, said, this jam made life brighter, not joking. Edges seem sharper, my mood is up, I feel highly motivated. My gym time yesterday was super effing pumped up.
Yeah, gym time in the middle of a jam is pretty magical.
It's also good because you want to get back to the jam, so you're just like, I gotta pump this so fast. You
know? That's where you fracture a molar from the clenching.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, and Baum said, I thought this was absolutely amazing. It was so challenging. I haven't made any sort of game for like a decade. I kind of followed some tutorials and spent like an hour a few times, but it was so good to work on something and see it coming along. And I think that's just a really big part of it is like, again, it's the thing – it's getting over that the inertia, right, of having not built something for a long time or having not done something like this. And I think – I always think about that really weird fact about physics, which is that – what is it? If something's sitting on the ground, it takes more force to start moving.
Static friction versus –
Yeah.
So static friction versus whatever the hell the other one's called. Mobile friction, I guess. Whatever. Let's call it that.
Once something's moving, it's much easier to keep it moving is generally the point. And getting something started, it actually just requires a higher sort of burst of energy. And I think jams are just super good for exactly that sort of thing.
Yeah. And I think life kind of hits you with this sort of like death by a thousand chores thing, you know, where under a normal scenario, you've got a weekend. And even if you do have the weekend, you know, free, there's dishes to do. There's meals to cook. There's groceries to get. There's laundry. There's kids. There's all kinds of
yards
stuff
to mow.
Yeah. And when you do a jam, you get to – it's like you put on armor that just kind of keeps those things from hitting you for a while.
Yeah.
Well, in reality, they're just piling up
the
outside.
Armor of neglect.
Yeah.
But it's pretty amazing to see what you can do when you just put everything in to making something.
But also, it's funny how when you come back, you realize how everything's kind of falling apart.
And it only took 2 days.
Which is also horrifying in its own way.
I went out for my run this morning, and so we almost – Our garage is at the back of our house, so we always come in and out through the back of our house and almost never through the front. The front, of course, is where everybody else would and where people see our house.
The guests.
So it kind of always has some neglect going on out there, which is a bummer because, again, that's the part that people see. But I was leaving this morning and last weekend I spent hours and hours and hours like cleaning up everything in the yard. Leave to go running this morning and it's like a fucking – there was so much green stuff everywhere, coming out of every nook and cranny. It's like crawling into every space. And I was like, oh my God, I have to deal with this.
Yeah.
But I got a jam to go to, so I'll do that later.
Later.
Did you start sweating? Because that's my go-to strategy.
I did, but that was mostly because it was hot outside.
Oh, yeah.
Right, we got conflicting answers about this physics point.
It's called kinetic friction, I remember.
It is kinetic?
All right. Yeah.
We have dynamic and kinetic.
No, so kinetic. Things,
I don't know how to say that name. Dodecado. I'm just going to call it that. Dodecado, so kinetic friction. There we go.
Thanks. Yes. That's nice. Mm-hmm. And we also have a comment from Atlantic who says, this game jam taught me more about how to work with other creatives. I learned that other creatives are not just superhumans who can create awesome art and music in no time. Now I know what to expect when working with artists and musicians.
Yeah. Yes.
It all takes a long time.
Everything takes a long time.
Yes. And we kind of talked about this in the past where I think especially for Sam and I, when we first started making games, we had actually both spent time doing the other person's job.
Yep.
So Sam had been programming games a little bit here and there, and I made my own games solo for about a year and a half. And
that was everything. So you did the art. Did you do music from?
I found royalty-free music here and there, you know. Mm-hmm. But you know, we all did music in high school and stuff, so we kind of know things about music at least. So I think getting to work alongside other people who are good at what they do, or even just like really fully trying to do it yourself, and it really allows you to work with other people more easily, and it teaches you a lot about what's required.
Yeah. Well, because it's easy from the outside to, for example, I would post a little GIF of basically a sketched out animation for, we have this thing called a bottle tree in Fields of Goop, and it's just this big tree that has sort of like a twist tie around the top of it, and then every so often it kind of like reaches up and kind of turns into a little propeller for a second. And I was working on it and made the rough animation in about probably 25 or 30 minutes, which was 7 or 8 frames. Showed that around the office. I was like, hey, does this look like a good thing we can do? And Seth's like, yeah, shoot for it. So I was like, okay. So I started working on it. And then, you know, about an hour, hour and a half later, and I'm fast at this point, I keep that in mind. So hour and a half later, I have 6 of the 8 frames done. And I'm just looking at those last 2 frames and I'm like, those are the ones, because it revolves like twisting an object in 3D space really hard.
Yeah.
And I was like, those are the 2 that are going to take me another hour and a half. So I can either do that or I can build this giant arena that Adam wants where everybody can start killing each other on. But having that context where you can say, okay, just getting a rough animation in for one artist can take, you know, literally an hour to an hour and a half to figure out the animation, not to get something that you could actually put in your game,
yep.
Right? So having a bigger team is always nice for that sort of thing, because people can actually specialize a little bit. But it is definitely one of those things that you learn over time, is just how much energy and how much effort has to go into each individual piece to make the whole thing work.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's good for team building. We'd also like to ask the question, what about this jam was harder than you expected, and what was easier than you expected? Especially for anybody who's here as like a first time jam.
For me overall, it was easier to collaborate on, even though we didn't do it in the best sort of development way possible.
You mean screaming across the room?
It was still surprisingly easy.
Our methods were loud.
To collaborate on having basically 2 independent pieces of software that are, in terms of their development and what they're doing, that are fully dependent on each other to make any sense and actually work. I mean, even earlier when we were trying to debug stuff, Sam was like, why don't you just revert it? And I was like, well, because I can revert some stuff.
But now the game's broken.
But now the game's broken. And, you know, and so despite all that, it was actually surprisingly easy just to make all that stuff work.
Mm. Now, back when we made our original MMO experimental prototype a couple weeks ago, we had the game and the server in the same Git repo.
Yeah.
Which might have been the right move.
Better.
That was probably the right move. We didn't do that this time.
Yep. Well, now we know.
Now you know.
When that Crashlands MMO comes out, it's going to be based in the Git repo.
Yep.
Crashlands MMO.
Crashlands 3.
So I see that Camiloop said making my own font was harder than expected.
Oh, what? Shit.
Making fonts is its own art form.
Yeah, it's its own thing.
Do you know how many letters there are?
And numbers?
A lot.
And then symbols?
Oh my. Especially if you speak any language other than English.
Yeah.
Now you got all these weird dangly things hanging off your letters and dots and wiggle lines.
Yeah. The funny thing about this too is that finding fonts that already exist is really hard.
Yeah.
Because if you're like, you decide what languages you got to support. And then so you go, and then you go find places that have fonts available that are searchable. And then you try to find fonts that you like.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out, okay, what's the license on this fucking thing? And then, okay, what languages does it support? Which it doesn't tell you.
Yep.
So then you open up the character sheet and you're like, I see some Russian in there, so
it's
maybe
probably this, good.
But does it cover the whole Russian alphabet? Like, I don't know.
Is it missing whatever the Russian E is?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what that looks like.
Yep.
We use defont.com, by the way, because you can search and you can put a little drop down in the search that says only 100% free fonts. That way you just don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Go through there.
Yes.
Which is super nice. I think for me, the just overall just working so much was weirdly easier than I thought it was. I feel like the last couple of jams I've been working through some stuff sort of like in how I relate to the art. And this time I was literally just making stuff for the whole time.
Yeah, it seemed like you just kind of were determined to just have a good time with it.
I was having a really good time. But the thing is, I wasn't even determined. I just was.
Yeah.
That was sort of the difference, you know?
Do you think part of it is because knowing that Adam and I had such a technical load and you were like, I could focus, like, stress out about volume and speed, but there's no way that's all going to get implemented.
I think my mindset has actually shifted pretty much entirely now, where it's – I didn't care. I was – basically, because we always figured out how to work with stuff, right?
Yeah.
That's just how it always comes out. So, you know, I started working on the character, and I was like, I think it'd be really fun to push this character design a bunch and do weird stuff. And I just asked you, I was like, hey, is it cool if I spend, like, 4 hours making this thing? And you're like – Yeah,
I'm over here with smoke coming off my keyboard. I'm like, whatever, man.
Yeah,
so, do you?
Which is super nice. You know, thanks to you guys for actually being flexible, that sort of thing. Seamus said, settling on a concept is a lot easier when there's time pressure.
Yes.
This is definitely true. This is why we use frequently in the studio, we'll use jams to generate ideas for games, because the short, super short window helps you from stop you from accidentally blowing things out. And it's very easy to do. We've done it with Levelhead even at some point. People from the Shenanigans Con last year will have remembered the open world prototype we showed them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which did exist for Levelhead for
which
a while.
We may have that. We may bring that back to Shenanigans Con.
Yeah. Let me tell you, the Levelhead campaign was originally an open world RPG like Pokemon, where you would go to other, there would be other members of the Bureau of Shipping, and they would have their like batch of levels that they made, and you would have to defeat them and get badges.
It was just like a Pokemon battle. The problem was, as soon as we did the math on it, we were like, we're going to need like a year, thousands of levels.
Yeah.
Just.
Yeah. Cause if you're like, okay, if you think about Pokemon, like you go, you fight somebody and they've got like four to six Pokemon, right? Does that mean we have to build 4 to 6 custom levels
per person?
Yeah.
Shit.
That's a lot.
So it had a bunch of holes in it, and we had to throw that out the window at some point. Kami said, honestly, I expected it to be a lot harder than it actually was. As soon as we got the idea, it just seemed to roll out quite smoothly, obviously with a few hiccups here and there. I think that's exactly what a jam usually does, because it rips off this sort of the idea that this is going to be huge.
Yeah. So the thing that keeps me from doing stuff like this is that it sounds like it's going to be hard. Sounds going to be a lot of work. Sounds like you won't be able to pull it off. And so you're just like, I'll just not.
You know, it sounds like if you're going to work on this big project, you don't want to kind of just shove it together.
Yeah.
You said you got to have a production server. You got to do this other setup and get all these things working. And so, you know, some time you just slowly die.
We also have Bam saying, getting familiar with GML and getting over, but it should work like this was hard.
That is one of the most important lessons you can take away. Just for programming or working with tools in general, which is that the moment you try to force a tool to work the way a different tool works, because that's the tool that you know, that's when you're going to have a terrible time.
Yeah.
And this is when anytime you hear somebody say X language sucks, right? Everything has its pros and cons, definitely. So there are things about anything that suck, definitely. But it's not the language that sucks. It's the fact that you're trying to make that language be a different one, and it's not.
It just isn't
that thing.
It's got its thing. You know, GameMaker is incredible for making things really fast. You know what it's bad for? Teamwork.
Yep.
That's why we have a small team. You know, I think if we scaled up to a larger team, we'd probably have to use something else.
Yeah, we have to jump engine.
Unless we want to just live in nightmare land.
Yep.
You know?
Bam also said, no time for scope creep if you have no time, which I think is
also true. Although, fantastic. People are surprisingly good at creeping their scopes.
They are in the beginning.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, as the timer wears down,
you start. 24 hours in, they're like, just fucking work.
You're just discarding. Yeah.
BK Taco said, this is my first jam and first game. So congrats. That's freaking awesome. I've only ever followed tutorials and videos, and I found it was harder to get started with a blank project than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
I just kept coming up blank with how to do things, but over the weekend it has gotten easier. That's a huge piece of it, is you don't have enough expertise to know what's available to grab onto.
Yep.
Right? So there's all these – it's kind of like
– Yeah. As far as you're concerned, making Call of Duty is pretty much the same as making Pong, like in terms of like how you would deal with it.
Exactly, right. So there's not enough pieces at play. And so a big part of these jams too is that what we try to do with them, like we said, with always kind of stretching a little bit, is finding some new stuff so that when you come across problems in your other work or just day-to-day – you now have a few of these other tools in your toolkit.
Well, I mean, even the very beginning of development this weekend, Seth was just ripping code out of other projects. He was like, I've already solved this problem. So he's like, go find something.
Yeah, we have probably 200 to 300 prototypes and discarded projects just laying around. And I can Frankenstein any together out of those. So, but yeah, and again, I think that kind of comes back to that question about doing jams and what the point is, because I remember when I first started doing Ludum Dare, which was in 2013, this was around the time that they started allowing people to use, God forbid, game engines, because Ludum Dare was originally building everything from scratch.
Including your programming language.
For some reason, they didn't. They allowed that. You didn't have
you
to
invent that.
Yeah.
Do they have a list of allowed languages? And some might be too easy.
Here's what we got to do. Before the jam gun goes off, you have to disassemble your computer.
Yeah.
And then the jam gun goes off. Build your computer.
Blindfolded.
Build the game. Yep.
No. But you got to start with the mining.
Yeah. You mine the ore.
So you all start out in a mine. You mine the ore. You take it in. No, you got to build the smelter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so where we kind of land on this is the most important thing about a jam is that you get something out of it.
Yeah.
And if, you know, I've made 19 different games and game prototypes that have an open world resource spawning system. I could just do that again, but I'm not really going to go anywhere with it, right? So it's better to just rip that in, just put it in, and then build a new thing on top of that.
Yep.
That Rumpus said, one of the hardest things for me was learning to say no to certain ideas. When we were kicking out ideas for our game at the beginning, Everything sounded so good, but I had to assess what I could realistically accomplish, and I still got in over my head.
Yeah, this is where Can We Not comes into play.
Yeah. Or rather, we'd like to start almost more so with a premise.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, than a fully fleshed out idea. So in this case, we were like, okay, let's use this DNA chaos thing. We know we want to do the franchise. So we got the goops going.
We fired up the goops.
And
the question is always just, what has to happen next?
Yeah. Right? And so we had this, when you were going to do this MMO thing. And so the first question was, okay, you know, how big is it room-based or is it a world that you can infinitely walk around in? And we had to talk about how that works on a server. And that was the dictating factor. It's probably easier actually to do an open world than room-based. So, okay.
Well, it turns out that an open world just is a bunch of rooms, really.
Yeah.
They're just –
Is it your neighborhood's secret concept?
Yeah.
So figured that out. And then basically we just sort of worked through all the constraints to figure out where we actually needed to start and then just started there. And said, and then sort of, as we've discussed even on the podcast a little bit, kind of shifted what we thought would be successful for the game as we went. So starting with the premise is usually a little bit
easier. Yeah, and here's the thing. The game probably isn't actually very good.
No, it's not going to be.
It's barely a game.
Yeah. We haven't gotten to actually play and balance it at all.
Yeah, we're just kind of scrambling to get the systems working. I also want to bring attention to Zivix's comment. Zivix said, I also realized jams can be really disheartening if you change ideas a few hours in or just generally don't know what you want to do with what you have. But just really forcing yourself to dive in and iterate is probably more important in those cases. I just kept making small improvements and changes, and suddenly everything clicked and I knew what the game needed to be. Yeah. So this is actually what happened with Levelhead also. So probably the most iconic part of the gameplay in Levelhead is the grappling hook and the package. Those didn't exist in the game until 7 months into development.
And we had already shown it to Nintendo and everybody else and had been like, we're going to make this. Yeah. And they were like, cool, looks great.
Yeah, and the whole time behind the scenes, we were kind of screaming because we're like, this is still just a generic platformer. It's just a generic platformer with nothing else happening. Yeah. Yeah. And then as soon as we got that in, then all of a sudden everything started clicking and then the rest of the gameplay fell into place. So sometimes it just is a grind. You know, you just keep putting stuff in and –
It's just like life. You know, you look out for opportunities and take them when they come by.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I see that Taylor also said, I'm pretty new to Monogame, which is a 100% code-based framework. And one thing I struggled a lot with is just how to organize the code in the assets.
Oh, yeah. That takes a lot of practice.
Which is, again, one of those weird things where you're like, what are you going to be doing if you're making a game? Actually, you will spend a lot of time figuring out your directory structures.
Yep.
Because if you don't, it'll bite you in the ass.
Because it matters a lot. I mean, I spent – yeah, for this jam, I was using TypeScript, which is the first time I've done TypeScript on like a – really fast-paced project that was pretty sizable.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of my time was spent trying to figure out how do I organize code specifically for TypeScript? Because you think about it completely differently. Right. But I had all this experience to draw from just working with Node and JavaScript for the past, you know, 2 years now, so that I had a starting point. And so it wasn't too hard to do that. But I definitely remember back when I started programming just in general, but particularly anytime I switch to a new framework or language, the first hurdle was always just, where the fuck do I put this?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I think because then you start coding, all of a sudden you can't find stuff anymore. And then, you know, like it starts to become really hard. And combining that with the tools that you're using, because how you organize things and what tools you use in combination is the secret to being able to successfully develop.
So actually, I started looking at this other vector program called Aspect, I think. I sent it to you. I can't remember the name. Starts with an A. It's fully functional, really beautiful thing. And I played around with it at home and I was like, I'm very excited about this. But the weird thing is I've gotten so used to working on just a single gigantic, basically infinitely scalable canvas, which is what Inkscape just is. Mm-hmm. Just one. That in this thing, you actually have to define the size of your canvas before you start.
What?
I'm like, what does this even mean? I don't know how to approach dev like that. And also whenever I make art assets, I always kind of carry around a pile of previous things I made to keep kind of the vibe. So as soon as I got the character done, for example, in Fields of Goop, there was just a sort of a pack of their frames just coming with me everywhere I went.
They're just hanging out next to your stuff.
As soon as I build some items, like those kind of go in that pile. And then like when I would go into the UI even, I just take those. That's the thing I start with in a new file is I just take this previously made art.
It's a reference.
It's a reference.
It's like your palette, you know, for painting.
And so I don't know how I would do that in some of these other programs. And then they have a lot of layer management and that sort of thing, which I know is supposedly good, but also I just don't like dealing with it. I was like, it wouldn't just be like, oh, you get to have this new powerful tool. It'd be like, oh, you got to rebuild literally everything.
Change
works.
Your workflow. Yeah,
and it doesn't work with the Inkbot either, which would be a pain.
Yes.
So we also got a question from That Rumpus, who said, are there any games or prototypes of yours that you use the most often? So this is something I wanted to definitely bring attention to for people who just finished this jam or who are finishing this jam and would like to do another one at some point. Mm-hmm. So depending on your engine, you'll want to try to find ways to salvage things. So typically what we will do after a jam like this is at some point we will set aside time, even like a whole day, to talk through the stuff that we did and try to figure out ways to develop tools around those things or in order to turn those things into packages that we can then kind of like bring with us. So the easiest example is we have a thing called the Beescutch Pack, which is something like 500 scripts and several dozen objects and shaders and a bunch of other stuff that we've built up over 7 years, and we just bring it with us with every project that we do. And every project that we do, we just add stuff to it.
Yep.
And to a point where, you know, maybe we hit a point where we're like, oh yeah, we don't have the ability to like see if two lines intersect. Okay, now we do. And that's just forever part of our toolkit, right? So there's that stuff. And then there's stuff like, yeah, the world generation thing happens a lot with like a top-down open world kind of a thing.
Well, we tend to like to make games like that that have – that you can just go run around.
Just go running around in the wilderness, in the fields of goop.
Yep.
Yeah, so those kinds of things are pretty important for the kinds of games that we make, as well as just general like upgrade systems, saving loading systems, basic interface items like buttons.
Oh, yeah. The really nice thing about being a programmer is that you don't just get to take the knowledge with you in your head.
Yeah, you get to take the work.
You get to take the work with you, which if you're not doing that as a programmer or just as a jammer in general, you definitely should be, because it's like, you know, most of the value, if someone's gonna, for example, hire like a senior level person specifically to do something they've been doing for a long time, what they're usually buying is essentially it's the Beescutch Pack equivalent, right? Which is, this person is very smart and knows their shit, but they come with
tools,
this crazy suite of tools that they've built
to
help them do stuff. And on the art side, it's a little bit different, right? Because you can't just take it with you.
Every time you make a new character, you make it a new character.
But so there are rules and stuff though, and there are things that make it way easier. So, I was laughing with the team earlier because I think Adam's wife Jenny was here and mentioned something about like, oh, I really like the colors in the game, and I was like, cool, I stole them from a picture, which is a new thing I do. Which is just like I have a Pinterest board. I do use Pinterest a lot actually. Just look at cool pictures on there. Called art collection. Anything I see that I'm just like, this is really good, I just put it in there. And then before the jam, I looked through it and I was like, which one of these has good colors? And I found sort of an array of six of them that I liked, piled them all together, and then ended up just using one of them. And I literally just made a little grid of circles and just droppered.
I saw that little
exactly what
thing.
It was. I was like, this is good because it has darks, it has lights, it goes from cool to warm. I was like, done. This will give me everything I need. And then I just used that to build everything. And part of it is, of course, you'll notice if you play Fields of Goop that it does have a restricted color palette. So there's a lot of the use of the same ones. So I didn't have time to really expand on it, but it was more than enough to kind of solve that entire color problem, which if you think about an artist's color problem, you have 256 million colors to choose from every time you make something. And then And then if you're going to put a gradient on it, now you have –
it's the same as the file structure problem for like starting a coding project. It's, you have nothing yet and you got to make some choices about how you're going to start this thing. Yeah, I think for – the stuff that I like to carry along is actually mostly tooling to make it easier to program. More so than taking things that are already solved. It's more just like being ready to solve any problem that comes at me. And so I like to invest a lot of my time in creating that tooling. And even while I'm doing development stuff, if I see an opportunity for a new tool, I'll just go ahead and make it, because now I got it and I can use it moving forward. Otherwise, I just try to identify things that if I had the time, I would make some tooling around so that the next time I have to solve anything like these problems, I'll be ready to do that. So that's what I really like to do. So for this jam, since it was all server-side stuff, I got to make use of all the tooling that I've built previously for making deployment really easy so that we can just – like it just I just have a one – it's a one enter button maneuver, and now the thing propagates on and exists on the server. And without having stuff like that, everything else about your programming life just – is a drag because you're just constantly waiting for things and you're constantly repeating the same actions over and over again. And so getting to focus on just the actual solving of the interesting problems, whether by recycling code or by building out your framework and tooling, or ideally both. Mm-hmm. I think those are that's where the real power comes from.
Yeah.
The fun.
And it's been interesting doing this jam because we haven't jammed since last Shenana Jam, right?
Yeah.
And actually at last Shenana Jam, we hadn't jammed since the prior Shenana Jam.
Yeah.
So it definitely feels like we've come a lot farther this time than we did last time in terms of just where all of our skills are. So that I'm pretty excited about. All right. Well, I think we're almost out of time. Is there any final thing out of the Discord? Let's see. Oh, yeah. Zivik says, Sam, what new knowledge from classes or otherwise would you say has helped your art the most in the past year?
I think two things. One is just doing a lot of drawings because I no longer care if I have to do more drawings, which is
– Did you used to care?
Yeah. I'd be like, God damn it, this didn't work. And then I had to go do another one. And so
– the redoing of work?
Yeah, redoing – this idea that you were redoing work, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I was actually thinking about this because I was looking at Fields of Goop, and we've got a whole bunch of really interesting objects in the world, and they're animated. So like the trees, as you walk past them, like, meh, and like they make
bite them,
they make noise, and they kind of wiggle. And we have like these flowers that kind of retreat into a shell, like a weird anemone thing.
They're pine tatoes.
and I was thinking about this, and I was thinking back on our Crashlands work.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the world of Crashlands compared to Fields of Goop, it's very static.
Yes.
Right? Like the creatures move around, but the items in the world are actually just pictures of
items. But the creatures aren't really animated so much as they have a bunch of parts that wiggle together.
Yeah.
Yep. No, the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so looking at kind of, because of course we started making Crashlands at the end of 2013.
Yeah.
6 years ago, just about. Yeah. So you can really kind of like just see just how far the art has come.
Yeah, for sure. So I think, the big one is just learning not to care about having to do more drawings and recognizing that it's not redoing work because it's actually part of the doing of the work in the first place.
Yeah, and that's true for programming too. When you're refactoring stuff because you fucked it up.
Yep.
That's just part of it.
That's just part of it. I mean, easily 3/4 of my entire weekend of programming was actually just refactoring and improving things and making things generic so that I could reuse them. Because the cool thing is that you're actually making your own tools just by doing the work, right? And you're skilling up and you're improving and you're solving your problems and so on. And so there's just nothing – there's no reason to feel bad about the time spent.
Yeah. I think I
love refactoring.
Is the idea of gesture drawing, which if you look it up, you'll be like, doesn't seem like that big a deal because basically all it is you just figure out what the gesture of a thing is, which literally you just simplify it as much as you can into like a line. And it's one of those things that until you get it, seems kind of trite and maybe even like a waste of time. And then once you get it, you're like, oh, that's everything. Okay. Yeah. Got it. And it helps you guide every single decision. So I think, I feel like I've just got enough layers now in terms of how I think about each individual piece that it's just easier to do everything.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's good advice.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think that's all the time we have for this episode. So this was a live episode from the middle of the Butterscotch Shenanigan Jam. This is going to go out on the normal Wednesday as a regular podcast recording. I think those of you who are listening to Discord are listening through a weird Meteor microphone that's really far away from all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to rehear this with actual good quality, you can do that. So we'd like to thank our producers Fat Bard and Jen Koster for making the podcast sound good and run smoothly. Thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the Butterscotch community, just go to podcast.bscotch.net. We've got links to pretty much everything that you need. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye. Bye.